This is Father Ted, and you are listening to the Bunker Jiu-Jitsu Podcast.
And we're back, everybody, back to the Bunker Jiu-Jitsu Podcast. Today, I got another OG from the Bunker. Technically, actually, not an OG. He's a secondary OG, which basically means that he entered the Bunker in the Bunker 2.0, the second one that we built. But he has been around for a long time. His name is Dimitri Tsurunis, and he is one of my good friends from, we actually been training together for a while now, probably about, I would say maybe almost 4 years. I'm guessing maybe around there, maybe 3.5 to 4 years. We trained at the same club together. He is a three-stripe blue belt, training out of JT6 studio right now in Toronto. And yeah, I'll let you... I'll let him tell him your journey. But Dimitri, welcome to the podcast, man.
Thanks for having me, sir. Honored as everyone else to be on.
Yeah. You've been on the podcast before, too.
Yes, I have.
Not this one.
No, this is my second run. So hopefully I've honed myself out to not say anything ridiculous.
Yeah. Well, yeah. The last one was a little bit out of your element because, you know, I had you were on the Fighting Priest podcast. It's like, yeah, come on and talk about orthodoxy and jiu-jitsu. And you're like, okay.
I'm like, can we just focus on the jiu-jitsu part?
Yeah. we did have you on. Yeah, we did have you on a couple of years ago, actually. I think that episode was like maybe two and a half years ago you were on.
No, I think it was last year.
No, it was more than that, dude. Because
all right, maybe life has passed way too fast for me to remember.
Way too fast because the Fighting Priest podcast has been dormant for like a year already.
Yeah,
and you were a year before that, like because the podcast lasted for almost 4 years, but you were on like 2 years into it, so it's been a while. Yeah.
Well, that was the 2.0 of the Bunker where I appeared and got all the back in my day story where you guys we were doing this. And I was like, this room is way nicer, Ted. I don't know what you guys were doing before this.
It was crappy before. Like I've been going through like some of the archives and like some of the old pictures and old videos. Cause I have a lot of video from the old Bunker, from the first one, from the second one. A lot of pictures and stuff that we took, and I'm starting to put it up like on the Instagram and I sound old on the Instagram, not just Instagram or IG,
not IG, nothing
the, on the line.
Yes, on the interwebs or something.
On the web. But I've been posting some of those old videos, like of the old training and stuff, and it's like whoa, like it looks completely different from now. So but anyways, welcome again. Dimitri, let us, tell us about your journey. Like, how did you get into jiu-jitsu in the first place, even before I met you? Because I think you were already dabbling before.
Yeah. I think there's a consistent theme here where, like, I was listening to Grace's podcast episode and everyone, and it's like, it always genuinely starts with, like, so I was, like, doing a random martial art, or I was playing a sport, and then, like, some random man with a hood on or something was like, have you heard about jiu-jitsu? And you're like, what? And then like you end up like, yeah, I did like a thing like a couple times, but then I came back to it years later. That's essentially what happened with me. Like, you know, I always was in athletics when I was growing up, so like I played baseball, rugby, things like that. I wish we had wrestling here in Canada, but we don't. I probably would have done wrestling.
But nobody talks about it.
Yeah, we don't talk about it. But it would have been nice. But I played baseball and rugby through most of high school. And then I dropped baseball and did a lot of rugby at university. And I went to Trent and Peterborough. So there was a 10th Planet up there. I think under Stu and Tim, I think if they still tricked. Their head coaches there. I didn't go enough to socialize with anyone, but I would say it almost started like this. Like I was playing rugby and I had some friends that were like dabbling in it. And I had a buddy that was like a white belt. Like he literally was like, I win. And he's a big, strong guy. He was like 6'6", like 260 pounds. And he's like, I go and I have like small 5'5", 130-pound guys like choked me out. And he's like, I don't know what's going on. And so he would like learn an ankle lock or like learn like a pass. And then we wouldn't even go to the dojo. He would just like, we'd go to like our rec center where like the weight room was and the swimming pool and like our athletic center was. And we would, very similar to the stories you told about like the shitty little like blue gymnastic mats, we'd pull those out and make like a 4x4, and he'd be like showing us ankle locks with no idea. Like he's just like, I learned this yesterday and this is so cool. And we used to like do that for like a little bit. I would be like a couple times after we lifted or whatever. And after a certain point, he's just like, dude, I have a crazy idea. What if you just start coming? And I was like, and I was like talking to like other friends too who played rugby with me. And they were talking about like, yeah, dude, we go. And it's like such an easy transition for like guys in athletics and rugby. And I'm like, I feel like it's more complicated than that. So I went and like, we sort of got like amped up and I was like, this is gonna be great. Like, we're so big, we're big, strong, athletic guys who just like lift weights. Like, dude, there's no way that like our friend is getting choked out. He's probably just being like humble or doesn't want to like, you know, be the guy talking shit. And we went there and I remember we ended the first class of Nogi, and it was that moment where like off on the side we were all like leaning against the wall like drenched in sweat, and like my buddy looked at me and he's like, this was way harder than I thought it would be. And he's like, dude, I kept getting tapped by girls half my size and like they were so strong. And I was like, I didn't even get to the girls yet. I was just getting dominated by the guys half my size. So the first humbling experience for it. And that basically went on for most of my university time. But like, it was mainly Nogi. I probably went like once or twice a week, maybe.
How old were you? How old were you when you were like, when you first
started? I would have been 19 and it went on until I was 23.
Okay.
Yeah. So, but then while I was still being bit by that bug, then COVID happened. So right basically as I finished university, where I think I was getting like competent enough. Like I was starting to like actually enjoy the, I was enjoying it regardless, but enjoying roles, felt confident moving, things like that. Mm-hmm. Then COVID hit. And so then I moved back to Toronto and that's sort of where we had like the big first heavy hit where like anyone that was already at like whatever gym was probably already in their secret like bunkers practicing, but I hadn't been in a gym in Toronto, so I didn't know anyone. So I basically spent the first like year and a half essentially until we reopened. And then that's when I joined Rev, I think the January of 2022. So
yeah, you joined after the final lockdowns were done.
Yes, yes.
There were two major lockdowns.
Mm-hmm. After the second one is when I joined.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then that would have been like my technical official start to gi, because I did maybe a handful of gi classes in when I was in university at 10th Planet, but mainly did no gi. I think it just made more sense to me from transitioning to rugby. I was like, but why do I have to wear pajamas when I'm doing this? This doesn't make any sense. And then you know, I think you and I have talked about this a lot. I think even you've talked about it too in your own solo episode. Like maybe it's just me and my personality, but like the moment I got there, everyone was accepting, super inviting. Everyone had stuff to share and show. And I found that I just started to like gi way, way more. I like that it's more technical, a little more slow paced. It makes you, in my mind, it makes you think more. I'm sure it happens in gi too, but that's just what ended up clicking for me. I just liked more of the playing with it, the lapel, wrapping people up. It just feels more natural to me. So that's where we are right now. But recently, as we've talked, like we left Rev MMA recently, and you and I have shifted over to JT6, and I'm like in like the morning classes and things like that. And I feel like more recently I've had like an invigoration of my jujitsu, just but also like life being busy, like getting married last year, buying a house. I'm sure that dug into my
life. Yeah, yeah. Okay, so we're jumping now. You're just
we'll fill in the gaps.
You gave the abridged version. So just to kind of quickly jump behind, because there's some pretty big life events. So you joined Rev.
Yes.
Friends really quickly.
Yes.
in the first few months, and then I invited you into the bunker. The bunker was already now like, it wasn't lockdown anymore. It was just kind of like, hey, let's get together on weekdays and
and
roll. So you started coming to those sessions quite often, mm-hmm. right? So you became a recruiter there. So then that's how we were kind of training.
Yeah.
So you're post lockdown as far as the bunker goes, right? But then 2022 was actually when 2022 that's winter was the first holiday tournament we did, which was in house, like just like the old location.
Yeah, the old one where I think Ryan won it.
Yeah,
and then there was the other one after, I think.
So that was the only one we did at that location, at the original bunker.
Yes.
2022. Yes. So you were coming for like 6 months, I think, or something like that. It was like 6 or 8 months you were coming to the bunker before we did that tournament in December.
Yeah.
And then of course after that, like in that spring, I got transferred. So then to 2023, I came over to Prof Elias, right? So
Yeah.
And then you were teaching
I think
combatives
in 2023, I think more or less the start of it, I would have been teaching combatives. I was teaching it to first kids and then adults. And then we carried that on for until I left Rev. So maybe like, what is that? Like 2 years, two and a bit.
Yeah, you have a lot of the teaching experience because you did a lot of hours like every week. Like how many classes were you teaching a week?
I was basically doing combined of adults and kids, 6-7 a week. Wow. And I mean, like, it was easy transition for me because like when I was doing baseball and rugby, I was coaching kids too. So like, I don't know, I think it's always been like a natural thing to me to want to show people stuff and teach. And you know, I'm sure we'll talk about it more, but like it always feels selfish to me to get good at something or try to get good at something and not hand on a knowledge to a certain extent. So that's part of it. Like it was the opportunity of it coming up there and me being like, I can't be learning this thing and not hand off any knowledge to anyone else. That just feels selfish. And also inherently, I think it just makes you better at the sport, everything. I think it helps you like lock into it and really like be intentional about it. So that was the biggest intent behind that.
Yeah. We were talking about that with Grace, like that, you know, teaching kind of ups your game so much more because you're forced to like go back and, you know, now I'm going to teach it. And I was talking about this with Mark as well in his episode, Manalo, where it's like, when you're teaching, you really got to be on your game because you don't want to impart like the wrong technique or the wrong details of the technique, because then it's not just you screwing up, it's a bunch of other students who are going to screw up, who's going to follow your lead.
So, oh yeah, no, 100%.
Right? Yeah, you have to really kind of like make sure that what you're teaching is perfect so that you don't make a mistake and then you don't pass those mistakes on to other people, right? So that's why it also makes you a better jiu-jitsu player as well.
No, yeah, 100%. Like, I think the first few times I was teaching, even to kids, to like, you know, at a certain extent where it's like, they don't know what you're doing. Like, they're not going to pick up on it or like see glaring mistakes unless you've shown it a few times. But like, I think even then I was still like, it was almost like an inherent imposter syndrome where I was like, fundamentally, you have to do this correctly. Like, you have to show the correct movement, even if it's a simple like Toriendo pass or like a knee cut, because the moment that you show it wrong and then there's a conversation later, like, why'd you do it like that? You're like, do I know what I'm doing? Like, but even then, like, even when it was like, oh, it went well and I didn't mess the move up, you're still like, this is terrible. There's no way. So it definitely makes you go like, I really have to like know it. And I have to make sure that like, you know, my hand's in the correct place, my leg's in the correct place. I got to make sure I'm explaining it properly, because then also when those people pass on that move or people watch them perform it, they're going to be like, who taught you that? And you'll be like, not me covering up. And you're like, yeah. So I think it definitely does do that. And I think it made me very intentional and humbled about like, oh, I've been doing this wrong because I wasn't paying attention to it. I mean, that even happened when I started too, right? Like I would basically say the way that my journey has broken itself down is every single time a new opportunity, whether it be starting in no gi or like putting my white belt on for the first time in my gi or teaching or getting my blue belt, every new time was like a reset of like a almost like a new part of my jiu-jitsu life. And it's so humbling to go like, oh, now it's more serious, because now I have to like really make it known that like I know what I know and I don't know, and I know that I don't know what I don't know. Because sure. I think it's very, very easy to be like, ah, you know, like I've done a couple classes, like I know what's going on. Or like I like to call it like the ego blue belt, where you get like your fresh, nice blue belt, and you're like, dude, most people don't get here. Do you know how much of a badass I am? And yeah. Then you get on the mat, and you're like, all right, so this one stripe blue belt just tapped me 6 times in 3 minutes. So clearly, I don't know what's going on.
Yeah. Or you show up at a competition and you're like, oh my goodness.
Yeah.
There's a whole other world here, not just my dojo. And like, there's a bunch of people who can really kill me. Like, it's an experience.
Exactly. And then after that, we shift over to JT6. I mean, I don't have too much to say about it. Like, it's been like a month or two.
So question for you. So if you said you were teaching like, let's say 7 classes a week.
Yeah.
That's a lot.
Like it was a lot.
In addition to like having a life and work and also training for yourself as well.
Yeah.
If you're teaching for like, for example, for every class, which is like about an hour, let's say 45 minutes to an hour, for every class, how much prep do you have to dedicate to that?
Yeah.
Like personally.
I think when I started teaching it, I would say before any class, I was probably doing... let's block it out by like an hour. I was doing maybe like 30 minutes of like thinking about what I wanted to show. And most often that was something that like I didn't necessarily feel like I knew perfectly. So I was like, oh, I'll show this because it'll help me drill down details that I don't know. So then that was like the first like 30 minutes of that hour of like just conceptualizing, like, what do I not actually know? Like, if I think about it, do I know how to do it? Can I like name out the steps to myself? And then I would narrow it down to like, I don't know, for example, like a knee cut. And then 30 minutes before, I would actively be like drilling it out, like physically, to then show it. So so basically double up the hours. So like, if it was like 7 classes and it was an hour each, then I was like 14 a week, because I want, happily, and to make less stress on me, as it got further along, I'd probably say like a couple months in, I didn't do that as much. Like, I knew to a certain extent that like, okay, this is what I'm going to show. It's okay to be showing this, because generally speaking, I'm teaching beginners, and it's always good to review basic fundamental moves over and over again. Because you want to make sure that those patterns make sense. And I mean, that worked for me too, to make sure I had good fundamentals too, is to be like, I'm going to review these and show these from my end. But it definitely is an intense process to start, I would say. But I think if you ask any instructor at a certain point, I would assume they would say you just kind of like get to wing it after a certain point, because you're confident enough in what you got to show.
Yeah, and you're not even really winging it. You just know it so well.
Yeah, it's intuitive. Like, you can show up and just shoot the shit and show it, and there's no real stress about...
Yeah, you can do it in your sleep, basically. Yeah. And for those who are listening, we don't know what we're talking about when we say combatives. Like, you know, like a while back, like about 3 years ago, like Rev MMA introduced, they became a Gracie...
certified. Academy.
So yeah. It's a Gracie, it's out of Torrance, right? Henner and Huron. And so you have like 36 combative moves, correct. Right?
Yes.
Which kind of give white belts a good solid foundation of jiu-jitsu, and you have to go through that. And so like Dimitri, even though he's a blue belt, because some people get confused, they hear on the podcast say he's a blue belt, how's he teaching, right? Like, because you can do that with combatives. If they have a system where you get certified in those 36 moves, you learn them, you pass, the system, the quality control is quite high, and then you're allowed, if you're certified in that, to teach those combatives to only white belts, right? So Dimitri was teaching, you were only teaching basically white belts, combatives. But yeah, like learning it over and over and over and over again, like you just kind of, you know it in your sleep.
Yeah.
Which is good. So the question I have for you, the controversial question.
The controversial, all right.
Because we're all about the controversy on the
podcast.
Is that, so of course, there is always this kind of debate in the jiu-jitsu community, right? Like there's like the debate between you know, self-defense versus, you know, sports jiu-jitsu. Is the self-defensive aspect of it, like the more classic Gracie kind of approach, is it actually effective? Not only effective, like I'm not asking, do you think this is kind of, the combatives are like effective like in a street scenario, but rather the question I have for you is, because you went through it and you went through it intensely and then you taught it for quite some time, I'll give you my take after, but I want to hear your take.
okay.
What do you feel that those kind of, that system and the 36 moves, that foundation, was it a good thing for new white belts coming in as it pertains to later, you know, when you graduate through that program and then you become a blue belt, for example, and you start rolling, you know, that, you know, is it a positive for somebody? Or is it better like the old school way, which is like basically you don't want anything, throw you into like rolling and you get crushed for like a year, right? You know, what were your thoughts on that? Like, did it give a good foundation? Was it benefit people who want to continue on with the jiu-jitsu later?
Yeah, I think it depends, but it depends in two camps. And the reason why is I think if you are a person who is not very athletic or has not grown up, the old analogy of like, if you haven't grown up with brothers, just beating the crap out of each other. Cause I grew up with two brothers and that's literally all we did. Sure. And if you don't really have like, not, and it's ors, these are just ors. If you're not athletic, if you didn't grow up with brothers or like, just like have a lot of like intuitive scrapping with your siblings when you're younger, or didn't really play sports or have a martial art when you were younger, I would say it's great for you. And the reason why is I don't think it builds phenomenal sport jiu-jitsu foundations for you, but I think it teaches you to move specific muscles and have specific foot patterns that you would otherwise not be used to. Like, you wouldn't have a sense of, like, how to be in guard or, like, the concept of, like, use your legs. People are very, very prone, especially, like, you know, when I go to the other end to talk about this, like, they don't use their legs. They use their arms all the time. They rarely use their legs. So I think it's good to help you understand how to move your body, especially if you aren't intuitively set up for that or you didn't do sports that are going to make you do that inherently. The other end of that is, and I probably fall in this camp, so that's probably why overall I'm like, meh. Like, could, like, if I went through, if I hadn't gone through it, would I be missing anything from a jiu-jitsu standpoint? Probably not. But I am grateful of like learning, getting to teach for it, and then like making connections and getting to like help people out. That I like. The other end of it is like, if you have played a sport or you did grow up with brothers and you are athletically inclined, I think the old school way is fine. Like, I really think it is. You're still going to get your ass beat. You're still going to get humbled every time. And I think like that is just like a good fundamental part of any sport. Like, I don't think it's a jiu-jitsu thing. Like, you go to any other sport and I'm sure there's systems in place that help people like get themselves in, get their foot in the door and like not really be exposed to like danger. It's what Gracie does to a certain extent. But like, that's a pretty standard part of it. You show up, you don't know what the hell's going on. You get humbled every single day. And then eventually it starts to make a bit of sense. I think it's just a good way to look at it in like a crude way is like, it's an additional buffer for those who are not like ready for that humbling step yet. I think that's a good way for it to go. From a self-defense standpoint, if you're asking me if I think they're effective, maybe. Maybe. I hope so. I hope Gracie Combatives is useful in a self-defense scenario. But I think it comes down to like, if you don't want to be in a fight, don't look at Gracie Combatives as self-defense. If you don't want to be in a fight, run away or convince the person who wants to fight you that you don't want to fight them. That's what you should do. I told that to everyone in Gracie Jiu-Jitsu. They're like, oh, what do I do if the guy does this? I'm like, do you want to be in this fight right now? They're like, no. I'm like, get up, run away. Like, that's what you should do. So don't look at jiu-jitsu or Gracie jiu-jitsu as like, I'm gonna stop everyone who tries to kill me with a knife. I promise you, just run away. It's not worth it.
Yeah,
What's your take between what this thing about self-defense and not?
I agree with you. I'll actually give it more value than you're giving it, which is kind of funny. You're the one who taught it for so long, and you did it for so long. I only went through the program like not even like fully. I just did one round of everything to be familiar with everything, because I was always like, I was already at the end of almost a blue belt when that program kind of came in.
Yeah.
So as somebody who was kind of like a little further down the line, and was already kind of rolling in the advanced classes when that came in, I have to say, and then watching the new kind of cohorts coming through, I'll say like the more value that I give to it a little more is that two things. One, retention. So like, mm-hmm. and I think the Gracies have kind of talked about this before, that, you know, generally speaking, jiu-jitsu has very, very horrible retention, right? Because it's such a difficult sport. It's tiring. It's exhausting. You get crushed. That I think it's like you lose like maybe 10% of all people who step on the mats as white belts will actually make it to blue. Right. That's like the general statistic, but it's not the same everywhere, obviously. So retention is really bad. If you're losing 90% of your people, right? Even if it was 20% and you're losing 80%, that's like not a good business model, right? Like
100%,
you know, for any sport or any kind of activity, right? So you want people, not even just from a money point of view, which of course that's obviously an issue for gym owners. They want to make money. 100%. I don't blame them. Like, it's a business. You didn't open your dojo so you can close it, right?
Yeah.
You want to keep them involved, right? And but at the same time, you don't want to lower the quality. So if you're losing 80% to 90% of your people, that's not a good business model. So from that point of view, the fact that the kind of the Grace Combatives thing, what it does is that it's like, okay, you're not going to roll right away because you're not ready for it and you're not safe. So you're going to go through this system, which is going to teach you. It's not about like, oh, you're going to be safe on the street. It's more like, here are some fundamentals, because it's not just takedowns. I mean, that's like even like how to break fall properly, right? How to break out when somebody is on mount, right? How to do like a basic hip escape, right? Or elbow escape, or, you know, like a hip bump, or like, you know, how to do a trap and roll, like these kind of basic movements that everybody should know. You do, it's covered within those 36 moves, and they don't allow anybody to roll until they kind of master these things. So at the very least, there's a really good kind of fundamental skill set there that then when you have these new people kind of, they get their kind of Gracie Combatives belt, which for those people who don't know, is kind of like in between white and blue, right?
Yeah.
And quite literally, it's a white belt with a blue stripe.
Well, you and I call it the Greek belt, flag.
Yeah, not to discourage it, but we call it the Greek dancing belt because you know, Greek dancers, you know, usually have like, you know, white and blue stripe belts when they're dancing on the cruise ships. But it's not to make fun of it. It's just as Greeks, we see this and we're like, oh, that's amazing.
It's funny.
Yeah, but it's halfway, right? And it makes sense that they would create that in this particular system. And so when you have these kind of newbies coming into the advanced class, it is good that they know some things.
Yeah.
They're not completely spazzy, that they're not completely like, you know, freaking out when they get mounted or somebody takes their back and things like that. So from that point of view, from those two points, I think that it had value, right? Like that, you know, that yes, you have some good fundamentals that, you know, to keep yourself safe. And also there's a higher retention rate because you're not scaring everybody off right off the bat.
Yeah.
So
I think the other added benefit here is, especially from the standpoint of a cohort coming into the advanced class, because I did this with people too. When we passed and graduated, you and I have talked about this based on our personalities, but like, I can think, if you're not a very social person and you're very introverted, going to a jiu-jitsu gym and going the old school route of just walking with a white belt on and then just having to be like, hi, do you want to roll, and getting obliterated? It does not maketh a very good intro to want to talk to people. But when you get a cohort of people that go through the Gracie program and then all come to advanced class together, you already have that bond. Like, you know, inherently rolling with someone, like playing, because it's what you're doing to a certain extent, is a very intimate act. So you get this friendship that builds up innately. So you know, you're all white belts or whatever it is in your advanced class now, but you have training partners right off the bat. And there's an accountability almost there where you're like, well, I can't leave now. Like, we're all in this together. Like, we got through that. Now we're in advanced class. Like, we all got to make it to blue, guys. We all got to make it to purple. Like, come on. So there is an added benefit there. I mean, Now, thinking about it, it's like that was, I think, a really big thing to be like, I sure would have probably had no problem making friends with higher belts and whatnot. And I did, but having everyone else around me who also got to the advanced class after that, I'm like, all right, sick. Let's see, in a fun competitive way, like who's going to get better first, or like who's going to teach the other person more moves, or whatever it is. And I like, if someone missed a grading or whatever, you'd be like, oh, I have like one more stripe for the time being until the coach remembers or whatever. So like it was fun in a way to like have all the lower belts like know each other and then
Yeah,
act
the
like that
camaraderie. Yeah.
progression together 100%. Yeah.
I saw that too, and I thought that was a very good thing. Yeah, because it again, retention, it keeps people involved, it keeps people, it encourages them not to quit,
Yeah.
which is
Yeah.
always a good thing for jiu-jitsu. That's I think overall it's a good thing. Now, of course, different gyms have different systems and they do different things, of course. And so I'm glad that you had that, like, now you're not teaching anymore there, you're at a different gym, so but you carry that knowledge with you, and I think it makes you better because you have, like, even when we roll together, I noticed that you have good fundamentals, and those fundamentals, it's not boring, it's just good fundamentals. It's repetitive, like, in the sense that I know exactly what you're doing, like I know exactly what you're doing, but it's still effective. It's really effective because I can't stop it. Because you've done
Well,
it
I mean,
times that you just right? Of course you're gonna evolve, but I mean, as far as just like protecting yourself, knowing like how to move around a person, all this kind of stuff, if you're really good at it, then it's still problematic for somebody else who maybe doesn't have those fundamentals or has holes in their fundamentals. So I think it serves you well.
I think it serves you well from the standpoint of I think it at best helps you understand how to move in a simplistic form. I mean, like there are tons of people who talk about this where like and I'm not going to go into it because I don't really have enough of an opinion on this, but like there's a whole controversy around like should high level jiu-jitsu games be like complex like Barambolo like spider guard spinny into like double armbar, like maybe, but like also there's arguments to be made of like the Hodger Gracie where it's like pass the guard, get to mount, sit on top of the dude, choke him out. That's not a complex game. It's not.
No,
And
he's the greatest of all time.
he's the greatest of all time of literally just doing a very simple game that you can't do anything about. And I
But I
think if
don't.
you, yeah.
No, I want you to finish your point, but I mean, like, I don't want to cut you off. I don't think, though, it's about. In that sense, I don't think it's a battle between intricate jujitsu, like sport jujitsu, and fundamental jujitsu, or like basic kind of, like, I don't even want to use the word basic because it's not nice. Like,
I understand what you mean, yeah.
I'm not using a derogatory way, like,
Yes.
or denigrating the classical, like, self-defensive jujitsu. I
Yeah.
think it's a matter of, it doesn't matter what you do,
Yeah.
if you train hard and you become proficient in it, you will kill.
Yeah.
So Hodger Gracie is considered the greatest of all time, right? But not because it's, well, he chose this school of jujitsu and this
Yeah.
school of jujitsu. Some people like to talk like that, right? It's like, oh,
Yeah.
he's so, this is way more effective because it's the old school. And if it was somebody else with a newer school, it wouldn't be as effective. No, I just think that Hodger Gracie is a beast and he trained longer than everybody else. And he understands the art more than anyone else. And he doesn't need to employ multiple different, fancy things because he's just so damn good at, the basic jujitsu, right? And he knows other things too. Like, he knows how to Barambolo. He knows how to do all the other things too. And I'm sure he can employ them because he's like he's a master. Like, but he doesn't need to. And just like you look at somebody else, like Mikey Musumeci, who is the intricate, crazy mathematician leg locker guy, right? And he'll beat people too, because that's all he does. And he's an expert in that field. I don't denigrate him because he's not going to go to mount and like do a head and arm choke. Like,
Well, I think we're touching upon like the most important part of jiu-jitsu. Hilariously, I was talking to my wife about this. Cherry, you know her, and like you see her roll her eyes when we start talking about jiu-jitsu, but I was having this conversation with her because I remember I came home after a training session and I was just like deep in thought and she was like, "What?" And I'm like, "I think jiu-jitsu to a certain extent might be the greatest form of expression in a sport by far. And the reason why is exactly what we're talking about, is because we can have this argument back and forth of like, Mikey Musumeci's like game is maybe not good because it's not the old school one, or Hodger's game is like old and it's for like slow old farts or whatever. Like, it doesn't, the point is it doesn't matter. The point is everyone you roll with, and the whole argument of once you get to purple belt, that's like when you've like defined your game or like the pathway that you use to attack. How you apply your jujitsu or what makes sense to you is like your personality. And it goes between the two. So the uniqueness of jujitsu has very much to do with how you feel applying specific techniques and how you feel comfortable doing them. Like, yeah. I know how to apply mount attacks. I don't like doing it. I just, there's no point where I feel stable there. I don't like that position, or I feel comfortable elsewhere. And so, like, I'm wondering if to a certain extent, like, how do you feel about this? Because, you know, you and I have talked about your game a lot, and like, you really like to play that like deep half, or you really like to play that side half. Like, do you find like, do you do that because it's easier for you, or do you find it because you like it? Because I find most often I do techniques not because they're easier, it's because I like them. I'll do moves that are stupidly hard for me to do physically, but I'm like, this is cool.
Yeah, that's a good question, actually. Nobody's ever asked me that. I don't do it because it's easy, because anybody who knows me knows that I'm like 300 pounds plus.
Yeah.
That the standard game for an ultra-heavy guy like me, who's also Masters 3, like older in his 40s, is smash, right? Like,
yeah. Start,
you know, takedown, pressure pass, and just,
yeah.
This is the 90% of all ultra-heavy guys, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So I did that early on.
Mm-hmm.
That early on and like late, but you know what? Actually, no, I'm lying. I didn't do it early on. Like, I have the ability to do. Like, it's easy for me to do the pressure passing.
Yeah. I mean, as a big guy,
right? Even with other big guys, I'm good at it. Like, I was proficient at it early on. Not to say that I'm perfect, of course, but like, I mean, yeah. I can do it, right? But because that came easily and naturally to me, I didn't want to do that. I mm-hmm. wanted to do what was hard. I wanted to do, like, not out of ego. Like, I mm-hmm. wanted to try to do things that big guys don't do. Mm-hmm. Why? A, to explore jiu-jitsu. And two, that nobody expects those things.
Mm-hmm.
So,
mm-hmm.
like, in ultra-heavy, you don't expect a guy to pull guard.
Mm-hmm.
You expect them to lock horns, like, you know, like two elks, like antlers, and they just sit there. And they're pulling at each other back and forth until the ref, you know, penalizes you for not doing anything, right? This is
yeah.
a lot of the ultra-heavy fights happen in competitions, right? So hardly any ultra-heavy guys that I know pull guard. And then, like, we'll try to work a guard, like, whether it's De La Hiva, whether it's a half or a deep half, and things like that. So I did it because I'm interested in it. It's fascinating to me. It's hard because it forces me to do things that are not easy for me. Yeah, like, it's just, it's exploring a part of the game that a lot of guys my size and my demographic don't do. So that's why I do it, because I like it. I guess the short answer is I like it, not because it's easy, because yeah. it's hard. It's hard.
No, it's fair, because like I remember doing that innately when I started, like both in gi and no gi, which hilariously, when I think about it, it's funny that there's a giant gap between them, because I basically started my game, my application of my personality, the same way. It was like, you know, I came from rugby and being like explosive and like shooting double legs, trying takedowns. When people taught me judo throws, I'd try to use them. And it like never occurred to me that pulling guard was an option. Like, it didn't make sense to me. And like, I'm pretty much always in, I always get them confused, because there's heavy, there's ultra, which ultra that you're in?
Ultra is the highest, then there's
yeah.
the lowest, super heavy.
Yeah, I'm basically always in super heavy, because I'm always between 210 and 220. That's just where my weight is.
Yeah, like 222 goes up to
yeah
ultra heavy, right?
Exactly. So I never want to be there, but I'm always in the division below. But it never occurred to me to ever pull guard. So like, This is the aspect of jujitsu that I like, in a way, where like, it's the humblingness of where like you have to apply it to yourself. And I actually don't think you and I have ever talked about this, because there was an aspect of this where I started to get into that mindset of saying, like, finding what you like and applying it. Is I remember there was a certain point right before my blue belt where I haven't competed, and I never competed, and I still have it now at blue for a variety of reasons, but we can talk about that. And I was like considering quitting, because I found I was applying that type of jujitsu, like this like very like rough and heavy jujitsu, and I was finding like I hate it. I feel like crap, and like it's not working. Like it doesn't, like I don't feel good about doing it, because it feels like I'm injuring my partners, I'm injuring myself, or like wearing myself down, and like I'm not succeeding. Like I'm not, like it doesn't, my roles feel like they're not going well. It feels like I'm doing the same thing with no success. Mm-hmm. And I remember sitting down and thinking about it for a couple of weeks, and I was like, you know what? Start pulling guard, and then find the moves that you like, and then just do that. And so like it was a really humbling experience for me to have to like actively fight against my instinct and then find movements that I actually enjoyed doing regardless of how hard they were. So that's like how I got to like basically playing bottom half guard and wrestling up. And it, cause like it sucks, but I was like, I actually really like doing this because it's fun and I know what to do.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was a hard lesson to go, just stop shooting then. Just stop shooting double legs.
Yeah.
It's a very difficult moment.
High risk, right? It's high risk.
Yeah.
Because anytime you try something new, you're gonna put yourself in bad positions, right? And,
yes.
Yeah. And when you screw up, which you will when you're not proficient yet, it's gonna suck.
Yeah.
But now extend that to competitions. Like I know, like I should have said this at the very beginning, and I apologize. You are
one
of the three bunker champions. So
I should have led with that
intro when I didn't. I apologize for that, because you won the last bunker tournament, and it was technically your first, I think, and your only so far tournament, which I feel honored that you competed for the first time in your life, even though you've been doing jiu-jitsu for quite some time now, in the bunker, and you won it this past December. So you're the third champion, but the first champion on this podcast right now. Hopefully we'll get the other, well, we won't get the other two because, well, it's a sad story, but we'll get the first one, but the second one, unfortunately, Dennis has passed away. But you know, you did that. And if you extend this kind of like, what's the word? This experimentation in your game to competitions, if you start doing competitions a lot, it sucks even more, because like, I've been working half and deep half for a while now and sweeping from there and then passing and then, you know, getting on top. But when I started actually doing it in competitions, it sucked because I lost.
Yeah.
I went to Masters Worlds with Arthur and with a bunch of other people. You were there because it was your bachelor party.
Yeah.
And you know, I'm glad that you were off at the Grand Canyon that day and you didn't have to see my shame, because it was so bad, because it's like, oh, I'm at the Worlds now. I've been working this, you know, pull to half or quarter guard, and then I'm going to wrestle up. And, you know, I've been hitting this now for a good year. I've been just hammering it in the dojo over and over again.
Yeah.
And I felt really good and competent. And then I went to Worlds, and my very first round, I pulled, and I hastily pulled. I pulled too quickly. It was sloppy because I was nervous. Mm-hmm. And I missed the guy's leg, and then he just walked around me. And then it was a miserable fight from side control and turtle for the rest of the fight. And I lost to nothing. Okay. And that was it. That was over. There goes that whole trip. There goes that 6 months of preparation, right? So it sucks. And then you're demoralized. And mm-hmm. then you come back home and you say, man, I put all that work into this kind of like bottom game for an ultra heavy guy. And it didn't work. So now, and then I have another competition coming up. So now I'm gonna do this again, because the fear is like, and the temptation is, don't do that again. I had friends tell me that. I'm like, I had friends tell me, see, you tried it, didn't work. Go back to the big man game.
Yeah.
And I said, no. And they go, why? Because you're not going to win. You want to mm-hmm. win. You want to go mm-hmm. get the medals, right? And I said, no, I'm going to try it again. So then next competition goes by, and I do it again. And it's not perfect, but I do better.
Yeah.
And it kind of works, right?
Yeah.
And then the third competition comes, and then I hit it perfectly.
Yeah.
So it sucks when you don't.
Terrible.
Like, It's terrible, but it's worth it in the long run.
I would even more say it's never mind worth it. It's important.
Yeah.
It's important for you to conceptualize that it's okay that it doesn't work the first time round. Because at the end of the day, the first time you did it, you're still learning it. I almost think practicing something and having it succeed the first time is a disservice to you. Because mm-hmm. I think it starts to teach you that you can go, oh, I can just like prep for this once and it'll work out. But I think from this regard, it shows you to go like, you know what? I don't know it then. Like, I need to shut the ego down and go like, yeah, I practiced it. Or like, I drilled it a couple times. It doesn't mean I actually get it.
Yeah.
And I find that happens a lot with techniques. Like I'll give you some perspective on the bunker. So I remember you were like, hey, earlier into 2024, you were like, hey, we're doing the blue belt tournament. Are you going to compete? And I think I remember saying to you like, yeah, we'll see. And then I think there was a certain point where you were like, no, you're competing. Like, this is happening. Like, I want you to compete in it. And I remember mentally being like, yeah, but like, I might be on vacation because I think I had missed the tournament where Dennis had won, rest in peace. Because I was in Japan, and I thought, oh, well, we're going to travel again in December. So like, I can't come to it, but I was like, I don't know yet. And then I remember it was like 3 weeks out and we hadn't booked a vacation. And I was like, oh shit. I have to go to this. I knew mentally in my head, my brain was like, oh, I got to compete at the thing. I don't want to. And it's interesting because I don't really get nervous. I know people can be like, oh, it's a flex. I'm like, no, I really don't. I don't know. Generally, I just sort of show up and I'm like, look, if the worst thing is going to happen, it's going to happen. And the way to solve it is just be there and parse through it as it goes. Like, there's no point of being super stressed out. Like, it's not going to help the situation. Also, nothing's happened yet. Let's just get there and see what happens. But before coming to the bunker tournament, I remember like a week out, I was like stressed. And I was like, oh my God, like, I don't know what I'm going to do when I'm there. Like, I don't know what game to employ. Like, you know, people are saying, oh, like, pull this, work your guard, like, work on the stuff you've been working on. I was like, no, like, it's not going to work. It's going to be like, it's going to be a mess. And like, I'm going to embarrass myself. And so then I remember the day I was driving up, I'm just thinking like, I'll go. I'm happy. And I love that Ted does this stuff because I appreciate that he brings us all together. I'll go lose my first fight and then I'll just have a good time and have a beer. And then I got there and I'm like, okay, well, this is happening now. And then as I started my first fight, when I got there, my nerves were gone, but I was still like, you know, like I'm going to lose in the first like minute. Like there's no point, right?
Yeah, there's 100 people here. Oh. There's 100 people here. People actually came into this. What's going on here?
Yeah, I just thought it was going to be you and me. And you'd be like, all right, we're going to film this role for like 16 times. Yeah. And then I remember like as my first fight started, and you can see it. Like you can see it on the whole.
Yeah. Yeah.
We dabbed up and my brain instantly went to, okay, it's double leg smash time. So I just like refused to pull and just wanted to stay on my feet. But there was no optimal time with anyone to shoot a double leg or anything. So I was like spending my first match going like, oh my God, like I'm going to spend, like if I win this fight, I'm going to spend the next my fights just not doing anything because like I don't know what to do. And I remember every single time after the first fight, I had to just humble myself and go, dude, just get to the ground, whether it's guard or not, and just like do what you do, like do the thing that you practice. Why are you trying to like default to this thing that you don't even do anymore of like standing and trying to snap people down and do like a wrestling thing that you don't even practice anymore? And
you don't do it in a dojo, yeah.
Yeah, I don't do it. I don't do it in a dojo. More often than not, I pull. And it worked out for me. And I remember as the fights were going on, because I had four fights, I think. Yeah. As the fights went on, as I kept employing that and like actually trying to do sweeps and stuff, I was like, oh, I'm enjoying rolling like this and it's working. But it was under a pretense where like I hadn't done it outside of the gym. And so it was nice to be like, really nervous about like displaying my jujitsu to everyone in a way, because that's what you're doing when you compete and roll. You're displaying what you've been working on to a certain degree. And it was like gratifying, but I also remember after, like, I think I felt like shit after, because I was like, that was just a mess. Like, we were just recorded like nonsense. It's just me doing like fake
Oh, I wasn't.
jujitsu. No, I know, nonsense of me, not the thing. Like, just I was like, oh my God, I don't want to watch this back. But then hilariously, I went home that night after, probably due to the awake chocolate that I was shoveled into my mouth in between rounds.
Plug
And I'm
for awake
pretty,
chocolate, yeah.
yeah, awake chocolate. And I'm pretty sure I stayed up till 5 a.m. rewatching everyone's fights over and over again.
Good times.
Yeah. And I was like, you know what? I think like in this year, I'm gonna have to compete again, because like there's it indicated to me like there's no point of switching your game up and then constantly questioning if it's good enough. And I also think the reality is that like I think anyone that's gonna compete or whatever it is, I think you just accept the fact that it's not you're, it, the moves aren't gonna be good enough. Your mastery of them is never gonna be good enough, and that's like totally okay. Just like
Sure.
apply them and see how they go. And you're always going to find tiny roots, like little gaps and holes in it, because everyone's going to constantly expose stuff. And like just focus on the things that you like and work on them and try to teach them to people to see if you're teaching it right and go from there. So that was a terrifying experience for me before, but then in the moment wasn't. And then after I was like, huh.
Yeah, that's okay. That's good.
Yeah.
I like to hear that. That's like the best story ever. Because we never again, like, yeah, you're the first one who actually won the tournament, and like it's interesting to hear that take on it. And again, it's like you might as well, you have to get your feet wet at some point. So I'm glad you were in a place where, again, it was a tough tournament. It wasn't like a
No,
softball
no.
tournament. It wasn't like, oh, you know. It just, yes, it was safe because we knew the people were coming and it was more family, kind of, you know, community oriented. It wasn't this massive thing. But there's some really good competitors
100%.
in those brackets, right? It wasn't easy. Like, so I think, yeah, you did very well. And yeah, for the first time. And the more you do it, the more you'll see what works, what doesn't work. And it's just, it's repetition. Just like in the dojo, it's repetition.
Yeah.
Repetition as far as when it comes to competing. It's just over and over and over and over again until you just kind of you know it in your sleep, just like the combatants, right?
Yeah.
Without you have your process, like I compete quite a bit, and it's like I have a process now. It's like I know. It's like I'm gonna go there at a certain time, I'm gonna do certain things. At one point I'm gonna stop talking to people, I'm gonna go in my zone, right?
Yeah.
I'm gonna do my thing, I'm gonna whatever. And I know that's what works. At least, you know, I have to kind of follow that process, right? And every time it gets a little better in that sense.
Yeah.
But when you try new things, though, the fear does come back. The
Oh,
fear.
100%. 100%. Yeah. I think you accept the fact that you apply a routine to it and you basically slot in what you're working in, right? Like the way that I like to think about it is like wake up, coffee, jujitsu, work, ha think about half guard, and then repeat the next day. That's
Yeah,
pretty much
yeah.
how it goes. And then eventually you're like, is this working out? I don't know.
Yeah, well, it's okay though, and also even like watching the recordings afterwards is really important because like my wife's like, oh, why are you watching videos of yourself rolling? Like, how vain is that? I'm like, it's not vain. Trust me, it's humbling. It has nothing to do with vanity. We're never.
Oh.
I don't know anybody who's actually watching saying, oh, I was so awesome here. Like, it's always like, oh, I screwed this up. Oh my goodness, look at this. Oh, look at these stupid mistakes I made. Right? Like, even when you win, it's like, why did I do that? I could have finished this fight. You know, 2 minutes early, but I didn't. So it's identifying the holes in the game and then going back to the lab, going back to the, you know, going back to the mats, going back to the bunker, going back to the, you know, to wherever you're training and plugging those holes and figuring out how can I fix that so I don't do it again, right?
100%, 100%. I think the entire point of acknowledging that you did a specific movement or like combination of movements is the acknowledgement that you have to also think, I know what I want to do, but I also have to do in the moment what makes sense to me. So it's interesting, right? Because I watched back a lot of those fights and I thought to myself, like, why'd you do that? Why'd you do this? What'd you do? Like, what'd you do here? And I was like, oh, I fell back onto something that felt more comfortable in that moment. Or maybe I didn't do this specific thing. But then conversely, it's the thing where you're saying, like, you know, you're watching this going like, oh, how vain is this? I'm like, I watched all my fights and I was like, wow, look at this loser over here. Not doing this right. Or he didn't do this right. Or, oh, I should have been tapped here. And I'm like, I think that's just the humbleness of jiu-jitsu. Like, you know, people talk about like, oh, there's the people that will never say like, oh, I did this well or whatever. But I'm like, no, I think that's just how the sport goes. I think like we all have this dream of like shooting a perfect double leg, taking the person down, passing the guard instantly and getting an armbar in 10 seconds. But it's like, that's just not how that works. And also, honestly, I think it would be boring if it went that way, which is why I think you try new things, because what, there's so much going on in it. Why would you just keep doing the same thing over and over again? Right.
Well, you got to adapt.
You have to adapt or force yourself to adapt too. Right. Like, I mean, the biggest thing about that tournament for me is like, we had the Gracie Humeda guys come and they did stuff that I've never, ever seen in the dojo. And like, I cross train, I go to other gyms. It's not like I've never been to another gym. So that's what threw me off. But like, they did stuff that like, they did sack throws. They pulled guard like every time they touched you. So yep. Like, I was like, oh shit. Like they're not even standing anymore. So what takedown am I going to get? So yeah. Like, it was freaky for me. Yeah.
Yeah. Which is growth, right? This is the most important thing. Right?
Yeah. 100%. That's the most important part.
All right. So we're coming up. We've already come up to the hour. So I'm going to ask you kind of like the final wrap up question, I guess you could say.
Yeah.
We're ready. Time flew by.
We talk too much, Ted. We talk too much.
We always do. Yeah. So the final question I'm going to ask you is,
okay.
What are you working on? Like, not necessarily what you're working on now, but like you're kind of like slowly coming to the end of blue belt now. You know, you've been training for what, 4 years now, like at least since you restarted four years, yeah. Right? Almost 4 years. And what do you hope, or what are you hoping to work on as far as a technique, like going forward in your game? Like, what are you interested in that you want to kind of really work over the next year or two?
Mm-hmm.
Have something in your mind?
Yeah. I know that recently, like over the last year, I started thinking about being on my back more often, because I think I just never felt comfortable there. And by proxy, I never did it. Mm-hmm. So over the next like year or two, I'm really focusing on learning how to retain my guard and also like shift between guards very easily, because I find it's very easy for me to stay in that, oh, I'm gonna just like go to De La Riva and stay there and just sit there and like do sweeps from there, and I'm finding that like it almost is like when I started my jiu-jitsu journey where like I was like stubborn and didn't want to like just pull guard, I'm almost at that now, but from the standpoint of being in guard, where I'm like, don't move past the most basic guards, just stay at them. And like, because like, you know, that's what makes sense. And I'm like, no, you need to like adapt. Like, do you want to play single leg X? Do you want to play like modified X? Like, what makes sense for you? So I've been playing more with this, and JT6 has been helpful with that, because like Nick shows a lot of guard stuff and he shows like a lot of world champion like techniques and like how to flow through them. And so that's what I'm working on and trying to find my footing in right now, so that like I'm able to be competent there and not just stay on my back, but come up properly and get effective sweeps off. So that's where I'm sort of stuck on. I think that actually might be one of the thing that, especially in be coming up to the end of my blue belt, I'm like, I can't go into purple and not competently be on my back and be able to come off of it, instead of just spending a whole match probably on my back or something like that. So, mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's a good goal to have.
Yeah. I think
off your back.
Yeah, exactly. And not sit there. I think the other aspect too is, I know that I pulled back from it, but at some point, and I think if people get the opportunity to, or find the opportunity to get it, teach. I think, like, you know, I've been talking about like trying to help out with kid classes or teach them again at JT6, because I think, like I was saying at the beginning, I think it's super important to teach. I don't care what capacity it's in. And I'm saying this across the board for anyone. Like, I don't care if it's you helping your friends, like showing them something or teaching officially a class or whatever it is. I think there's something so important beyond making you better at jujitsu or anything. I think it's like fundamentally important to us as people to like connect and communicate and like display ideas and collaborate. I think it's not good for someone to solely focus on what they want to work on and make sure they're good at it. I think it's like imperative to be able to like go to people and be like, dude, my guard's not very good. Can we practice this? Or like, I'm going to like teach this specific move that I'm not very comfortable in. Or like, even as simple as like going into a role or whatever it is and being like, hey, I'm only going to stay on my back this entire time. And like, I want you to just try to smash me and pass. Like, I think teaching is also a state of vulnerability because it's an acknowledgement that you're teaching something that generally you probably don't know perfectly. I don't know. I feel like most instructors might acknowledge that as like when they teach something, part of it is because they're trying to learn it too. And it helps
or to perfect it.
Or to perfect it. So that's the other thing that I want to start worrying about, especially like, I know that it's more appropriate as you get to purple to teach, but I think like that's a big thing. Like, I know that not if I know that it'll be when I get my purple belt, it'll be a big proponent for me to be like, I really want to teach. Like, I think it's part of giving back, but it's also for like my development as a jujitsu practitioner, but as a person. So yeah. So two aspects, jujitsu and growing as a human, but I guess those are the same thing.
For some people.
For some people. For some, not like losers like us where jujitsu is half our life.
Maybe a little more.
Yeah, maybe.
Nice. Well, on that note, I think we'll wrap it up. Thank you, Dimitri. Appreciate your time.
Thanks for having me. Thank you.
Your journey and a little bit of your insight. And excited for you and what the future is going to bring for your kind of jujitsu career. And God bless your wife for her patience, for the hours that you spent together. Thank you, Sherry. We'll obviously, I'm going to see you like in a day or whatever.
Yeah.
That's again. But thank you for sharing your time with us. Appreciate it.
And I want to thank you because you do so much for everyone, for the jiu-jitsu community, for me. Like, you do a lot, man. Like, I know putting together, like, the bunker and everything like that is a lot of work. So, like, you know, you're a big proponent for it, too. Like, you're one of the big reasons that I stick around in jiu-jitsu because you keep us all together.
Oh, thank you, man. I appreciate it. That's because I don't let you leave.
Guys, he's actually holding a gun to my head. He won't let me quit. Please get me out of here.
Nobody, at least somewhat close to you. You're nowhere near close to my size, but you're more closer than most people. You're only like 200 pounds lighter. I mean, 100 pound lighter, you know what I mean? Something. Thank you. I appreciate it. And it's good. Good training partners, good friendships. And
100%.
Hopefully keep it going forever. So,
I mean, that's what it's all about.
Yeah. Well, thanks, Dimitri. And thank you to everybody for listening. And we'll see everybody next week. Take care, everyone.
Thanks for listening to the Bunker Jiu-Jitsu podcast. Feel free to follow us on Instagram and YouTube. And if you want to reach out with any questions or if you're interested in being on the show, feel free to email us at bunkerjiu-jitsu@gmail.com. Thanks and take care.